This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It's almost impossible to be truly ready for Oscar weekend without taking a major chunk out of your December to watch the barrage of last-minute releases. But we're trying, because we're just about to dive in on the films nominated for this year's Academy Awards, plus the ones that should have made the cut. The awards are going to be handed out this Sunday. Our guests are Corey Hall, a writer and comedian whose work can be found in the Detroit Metro Times and WDET, and Michelle Kisner. She writes for SpoilerFreeMoviesSleuth.com and also co-hosts the site's podcast. I went over the Detroit Film Critics Society nominations. Mm-hmm. It's an organization that you're both part of.
Yes.
It was interesting to me that there were definitely exceptions. The nomination of Lupita Nyong'o for Best Actress in Us, which was just a huge performance for her last year. And the elimination of Joker, which didn't get nominated for anything, I think, by the critics. That list did not look radically different. There were lots of noms for The Irishman, lots of nominations for Noah Baumbach's film. Is the Oscar problem an issue of the Academy or an issue with the way most of us treat film?
Well, the Academy is definitely to blame, and it is certainly an older skewing demographic. I think a lot of older voters who are sticking around and have been voting for the Oscars for decades continue to get screeners. They continue to get ballots. So it's a gradual process. But I don't know. Since they've expanded the Best Picture category to 10 nominees or 9 or 10, depending, it's been great for a lot of films that would not have been considered previously. But there's always going to be something that falls through the cracks.
If these films are supposed to speak to some kind of zeitgeist, then I guess we're truly in a murder clown World War Hollywood nostalgia sad white people moment. Yes. In the United States. One film.
So a gathering of the juggalos is what is really right. 2020 America.
Tell me about a film that the Academy liked that you also enjoyed. Well, I guess we could talk about Parasite.
Yeah, Parasite.
For those who didn't see this, it is available on the streaming services right now. Michelle, I know this was a special favorite of yours.
Yes.
Could you explain the premise?
It's in Korea, and there are two families, the Kims and the Parks. The Kims are all out of jobs. They are kind of like hustling, I guess is the term you could use for that. They all have these skills that they have, but the economics of their area is not supporting them actually having jobs. So they find an inn at a estate of the Parks, who are affluent people, and they basically con their way into their household by eliminating the people that work there and taking their jobs. But the Parks don't know that all the Kims are related to each other. So it's like this thing where they're trying to hide the fact that they all know each other, but basically they're the parasite of the title. They're, you know, gleaning their wealth from the Parks.
There are two families coming together in such a way that one family has no idea what's going on.
Yes.
And there's beautiful art direction in this film, mm-hmm. but it is a feast of performances. I was going nuts over the actor who played the father of the Kim family, Kang mm-hmm. Ho-song. I could watch him all day. He's like a merry-go-round broke down in terms of his face and his delivery.
Yeah, from top to bottom, the whole cast is stellar and believable. And also, since we're not generally familiar with these Korean actors in the United States,
yeah.
It really creates a full immersion in this story, and it's a wonderful film.
I do like that it is opening doors for more foreign films to get a distribution. I think this happened with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where it was a foreign film that it appealed to a mass audience, and then so there was this big rush after that film came out for everybody to like grab, you know, other foreign films in that same vein. And I feel like Parasite will also inspire such a thing, which is, regardless of the one's opinion of the quality of the film, it's a good thing that it gets more foreign films available for people to see in the theater.
Parasite delivers some painful truth about the disconnect between the upper class and people in working class life. I mean, not that it needs to be, but could you see this film get remade in America? Do you think that the message is that resonant with what's happening right now?
Oh, I probably guarantee it'll get remade in America. Oh. And I hope people don't have to have a remake to get it contextualized, because while there are some cultural cues that we might not really pick up on in Parasite, I know we've talked about this, that
yes.
we both watched it, and maybe some of the jokes we're not quite getting, mm-hmm. the overall impact of the film is not lessened at all. You get the immediacy
yeah.
of the story.
Noah Baumbach's drama Marriage Story also got a lot of attention. This
yes.
is a film starring Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver as a couple that's splitting up. The Detroit film critics and the Academy both like this one a lot, and it tackles themes that Baumbach has been at before, divorce and its effect on couples and families. What made this one stand out?
it was the performances, at least for me. It felt very human and relatable, even if their situation around them isn't perhaps as relatable. Like, we're not all, like, you know, like in the arts.
Directors in New York.
Yeah.
And film actresses.
I mean, if you remove their environment, I think every single person has been in a relationship that has been troubled like that, where you love somebody, but it's falling apart and you can't stop it. And you're both, like, you know, just trying to keep something together that maybe shouldn't be together. That part's relatable. If you just remove the environment from it, then it's 100% anybody can relate to a relationship going sour.
Yeah. Corey, did you enjoy this one?
I did. I think maybe the response to it is because it's a sad story.
Yeah.
It doesn't resolve in the way, and I think critics tend to grade on a curve and go, ooh, that didn't do exactly what I thought it was going to do, So I'm excited about it. I will say my favorite part of Marriage Story are the supporting performances. Laura Dern is fabulous. Ray Liotta, or whatever that face is now that doesn't look like Ray Liotta.
playing just a shark-like divorce
attorney. And Alan Alda. Who is, of course, always wonderful. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Alan Alda's just like butter on a warm scone. He's delightful.
Guys, is it weird that the Academy didn't give Robert De Niro a nomination for The Irishman?
I would say, I think, maybe because it seems like, you know, everybody loved The Irishman and he's in it the most.
Well, I wouldn't say everybody.
I mean, I wasn't a fan of it either, to be honest, but I feel like if you were going to award somebody from that film, he did a good job at what he was given to do. It seemed a little like a snub.
I try to tell people that the Oscars are almost never about the year itself or about the specific movies. It is kind of a cumulative process. So I think this year, Quentin Tarantino and Scorsese, who had earlier in their careers when they were really vital, been kind of overlooked.
It just made making explosive films at the time.
Now they say with two films that are not the best of their careers for either one of them, I think it's fair to say. I mean, I'm not slamming these films, but they're not Pulp Fiction or Raging Bull.
Right.
Then suddenly now the Academy goes, oh, well, what about the Scorsese guy? Is he worth looking into? And with De Niro, they've also been there with him before. Mm-hmm. You sort of get your opportunities, and there's a limit to how many times they're going to reward you.
I don't want to put you two on the spot for the entire Detroit Critics Society, but I noticed that one of the films that got a lot of Oscar nominations, Joker, did not get any out of the group. What did you guys think of it?
Well, I actually didn't dislike it. It's serviceable. I thought Joaquin Phoenix, oh, I'm saying his name right, did a fantastic performance. It's a really good performance that's surrounded by a mediocre film. Mm. I liked the musical score, which actually was a female composer, and I'll mess her name up, but she also did the music for Chernobyl that was on HBO, and that was really good. But other than that, I thought the movie was a little bit toothless, and I think it was trying to play both sides.
Corey, what did you think?
Boy, I hated it.
Why?
I haven't hated a movie that much and that intensely in about a decade.
Oh, wow.
It really, to me, spoke to all the wrong, you know, all the dark, evil portions of our inner nature. And I think despite all of the claims from the filmmakers that this was some sort of political commentary or satire, taking the DC Comics universe and putting a movie that cynical and that bleak and that morally irresponsible under the label of a superhero film, which people come in with, you know, Cesar Romero is the Joker. Hey, they know this character. They love Batman. And this movie is just a receptacle of misery and bad feelings, and they reward the character's violence as the payoff. He becomes liberated by violence, and I think that's a really irresponsible message to put out in the world now.
I am so curious to see if the Academy liked this movie.
I can't imagine some of the older people liking this movie, but I don't know.
It got so many nominations, though, which was weird to me. It didn't feel like it was that good. And then it got 11 noms, I think. But
well,
I don't know
Joaquin
why.
Phoenix is incredible in this.
Yeah, he's good.
But he's always incredible. And there'll be another incredible performance to reward later.
But he did a better performance last year, and You Were Never Really Here. And he's playing almost the exact same type of a character, like a PTSD.
The Master.
Yeah. He's done it better before. So now I think it's like you were saying earlier, it's like, let's reward them now for stuff they did like 3 years ago.
Kind of how the Oscars work.
Yeah, right. If you're just joining us, my guests are Michelle Kisner of SpoilerFreeMovieSleuth.com and Corey Hall, a critic with Metro Times and WDET, and we're talking about Oscar season, the films that made it, and the films that should have. Can we talk about some stuff that you liked and that the Society liked that the Academy glossed over?
Sure.
Sure. I was very into Uncut Gems. I feel like it was just completely snubbed. And I think part of why it was snubbed is that it's an unpleasant movie to sit through. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that the movie 100% intends to be unpleasant, and it is.
This is the Safdie brothers film with Adam Sandler about a jeweler who is just involved in horrendous gambling debt and an even more horrendous sort of heist to try to make good on his financial situation.
Yes.
It's a very fast-moving film. People are saying a lot of amazing things about Adam Sandler's role, but just also the pacing and the way it cranks up the tension in this in this really difficult balancing act he's trying to hold on to.
And Adam Sandler is incredible in it, and I know he gets a lot of flack because he's Adam Sandler in the films he's done, which I don't have an issue with his comedy stuff. Like, it's whatever. It's, you know, fun. A lot of people have nostalgia for his older films. But he can put out a good performance given a good director. Punch Drunk Love, for example, he's fantastic in that. I mean, he has the capability. I actually saw an actor's roundtable with him where he said he didn't deserve to be sitting at that table. That's the kind of guy he is, that he doesn't think he's good enough. And I think he is. And I think this would have been a perfect chance for them to kind of like reward somebody that really went outside their box and tried and did a fantastic performance. And I think the movie itself just being so frenetic and anxiety inducing just makes people want to kind of write it off. People don't like movies that make them feel bad.
It feels more like a heist film than a quote-unquote serious film.
It is just nonstop tension. It is just, you will not have nails left on your fingers by the end of it. So for me, it was a little overwhelming in the one tone of it. Mm-hmm. Was oppressive a little bit. Yeah. That's why I didn't love it. But Sandler, you're right about if you get the right director. In Punch Drunk Love, Paul Thomas Anderson, and in here with the Safdie brothers, they took all the things Sandler does in a regular dumb comedy. Mm-hmm. And you made that into a real person, and that's terrifying.
Yeah.
If you met a guy that, like, wired up and angsty, and you would be frightened. And in a comedy, you know, he's like,
You wouldn't want to go hang out with this guy.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and in a movie, you know, he falls down the stairs and throws a beach ball off David Spade's head, and everybody goes, ha-ha. In this movie, you're like, that guy's creeping me out.
Yeah, it's about addiction, really, when it comes down to it. Addiction and how it destroys someone, and it can make them myopic to the degree that they disregard their own health, their other people's health around them. Like, the film, I think also it's a little bit art housey, slightly, the way it's presented. The intro is very, like, you know, starts out in the cosmos, and then it transitions in this other stuff, and there's, like, this kind of weird mystical quality about the gem that everybody's chasing, the so-called uncut gem from the title. The movie's just postmodern enough, I think, to where it's slightly off-putting. I think it's a little too weird for Oscar voters.
Corey, what was one of your favorites that was overlooked?
The Farewell, obviously, it was one of my favorites of the year.
Such a hilarious and charming film.
There was a great film called Last Black Man in San Francisco, which I really enjoyed. It's a gorgeously shot movie, just at least for the cinematography alone, and the performance is great in that. And I think Eddie Murphy in Dolomite Is My Name.
That was a Netflix original.
Would have been, but unfortunately, due to it being Netflix, there's a lot of controversy going on with Netflix and their role in Hollywood. I would have liked sentimentally to see Eddie Murphy get a nod just for being funny again and being the Eddie Murphy that he used to be.
Yeah.
This performance, he really brings out all the things we used to love about him. And he does a great job. It's a dramatic actor in the film, too. Yeah. I would have liked to see
it. It's a love letter to indie filmmaking, too, which, you know, could use a little bit more attention. You know, we're in the age of the blockbuster and, you know, giant mega corporations owning, like, every studio, like Disney, you know. So I think that maybe could have got a little bit more love in that respect.
And it was about Rudy Ray Moore, who was this outsider who made what they, you know, when they used to call it blaxploitation genre. But that movie's a reminder that those movies were made for black audiences.
For people to watch.
By black filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And it chronicles that little moment in the 70s when people got to do wild things on their own outside of Hollywood's view.
Right. I noticed that the Detroit Critics Society also really liked Wesley Snipes in that film for his supporting role as one of the other directors.
It's another
in the
comeback where you're happy to see. Oh, where's Wesley Snipes been?
I was like, where's he been?
And he's really delightful in that movie.
Boy, you got the gift. Don't you never let nobody tell you can't be anything you want to be. You understand?
Yes, sir. Rudy, come on. The film about to start.
Hey, Lady Reed, why don't you go on and watch the movie? I seen it already. These people are going to be out here at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and they came to see Dolomite, so I'm going to give them Dolomite. All right?
All right.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about a film that I just loved. It's one of the weirdest films, and I sort of can't even believe it got a wide release, and that's Robert Eggers' The Lighthouse.
Yes, absolutely loved it.
All black and white, fantastically weird piece with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson as a couple of solitary lighthouse keepers. Mm-hmm. And it's I felt funny recommending this film to some people. Because it's really not for everyone. Yeah. But
you wouldn't tell your aunt to run out and see this one, yeah. Maybe. But
if you can handle something a little weird,
unless your
horror,
aunt's hardcore,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
maybe
right.
She's into it. But that is, I thought it was maybe a step or two too weird intentionally. It's in a Academy ratio, which is a box instead of a rectangle,
yeah.
From the film presentation, and some of the touches. But Dafoe.
He's insane.
It's an insane performance.
From someone who kind of specializes in weird roles anyway.
Yes. Yes.
It actually is fairly popular online, I've noticed, which when I first saw it, I was like, yeah, that's a CinemaScore F movie if I ever saw one. But and then when it came out, people loved it. It's just, I think people were kind of starving a little bit for something weird and offbeat like that.
Well, when you see something like Lighthouse or Uncut Gems, you're going to have an experience.
Yeah.
You don't always have that when you go to the movies. You might go, oh, well, that was pleasant, or you won't be moved by it.
This is Smash Mouth filmmaking.
Right,
yeah.
You can't escape these films. They're in your face, and they will make you feel something. Whether you like what you felt or not is the issue.
Could we maybe choose a few films from 2019 that we haven't mentioned so far that you just really wish people would stream tonight?
I believe this film is streaming on Hulu. It's called The Nightingale.
Yes, this was from the same filmmaker who brought us The Babadook.
Yes, Jennifer Kent, I believe, is who
Australian filmmaker.
Yes, I think this movie got overlooked because, it did actually play a little bit in 2018, like right at the end at a film festival, but it didn't get wide release till this year. It's a very brutal film.
Again, hard to watch.
We don't want no trouble.
That's just the way, isn't it? You don't want trouble, but sometimes trouble wants you.
I would like to give a little content warning if you choose to watch this film. It is extremely brutal. It has sexual abuse in it, violence, if you're sensitive, that kind of thing. It's very intense. However, I don't think it's that way to be an exploitation film. I think it's that way to prove a point of a time in history when women were subjugated and where, you know, people didn't have the rights that they should, the Aboriginal population also. And I do like that it balances the main character who is white, but she's a female and she's being oppressed. But also it focuses on the black people that were also being oppressed and kind of comparing and contrasting the different styles of oppression that can happen in that kind of environment. It's just extremely well made. But the subject matter was so horrific, I think, that people skipped it. But I believe it's on Hulu. And if you have the stomach for it, it's just a fantastically made film.
How about you, Corey?
I would say Slim and Queen, or Queen and Slim. Excuse me. Queen and Slim got a little overlooked. It's kind of a Bonnie and Clyde, a fugitive story written by Lena Waithe. That's a terrific film that I don't think a lot of people saw. It deserved better.
Mm-hmm. Corey Hall, the Metro Times and WDET, and Michelle Kisner of SpoilerFreeMovieSleuth.com. Guys, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Been a pleasure.
Still to come on the show, we talk with the new chief storyteller for the city of Detroit. That's next on Stateside.